Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. I am Davis Maddock. As always, on Fridays, I'm joined by my buddy, Rich Rebar, where we pick our five favorite games against the spread. I'm coming in, though, licking my wounds, man. Not only did I not have a great DFS weekend, but did not have a good betting weekend either. You know, we lost Arizona. I lost Arizona, and I lost Seattle, two spots that I felt pretty confident in. So, not feeling all that great, basically, about how last week went down, but very excited to get back on the horse this week.
Yeah, last week was still good for me. I mean, I lost Arizona too. I was on Arizona and bet them in the afternoon, but I just had tunnel vision on the Ravens last week. Like the whole week I was just in on the Ravens. They were my number one pick on this show, but I put so much into the pot on the Ravens that even though I had a losing record betting overall, money wise, I came out ahead because I won the Ravens at where I bet them. So, I mean, I still came out ahead. I'm curious, man. I didn't hear about the DFS week. I didn't listen to the Gilcast this week to hear the sorrows. Last week was good for DFS on my end,
but freaking my team was actually Justin honestly Jackson, fine, okay, but okay. I just played Justin Jackson, and I also played Chase Edmonds, which was not like he was about 30% owned in cash games on DraftKings. Like he wasn't like the stone chalk, and Chase Edmonds, you know, led the entire weekend in snaps and in touches, but only turns out 11 DraftKings points. So it really wasn't the best week of all time. And honestly, not a great start to my week this week because I did take the Tennessee Titans in my picks contest. Again, just like it's like the Titans is like this finally the second I decide to believe, then they turn into the team that I think they are, which is like terrible decision making, running on second and long, like doing all the dumb shit that the Titans do, and it just doesn't work out. So that was a little bit of a brutal spot last night as well.
Yeah, I had to over last night just because we were joking before the show. I was like, I don't believe in the Colts or the Titans, so I didn't want to take either side. And neither side really stood out to me. Obviously, that's why it was, you know, 1.5 and kept going back and forth between the two. And it swung to the Colts' favor yesterday as favorites. But I just took the over and got out of there. Even that was dicey until I got the shank punt and the block punt. But we escaped. We had a fun slate this week. We obviously have the Masters has made kind of given us all of our wishes. Because we've got the 5 1 o'clock games and 6 4 o'clock games, like almost a dead even split. It's what all of us always kind of like wish we could have. So, I mean, the Masters helps us out in that regard. And all the good games seem to be kind of backloaded. There's a couple 1 o'clock games that stand out as interesting. But these lines, I think picking 5 games is tough this week for 5 sides on just the main like Sunday of games, unless you dip into that Bears game. Because I mean, we got this Brown situation that just developed where they are shutting down their facility. We don't know really who is going to be like get involved in contact tracing with them. We don't know who's going to be involved. And even that, you know, Browns -3 versus Houston is kind of a sketchy spot anyways. We got this Denver Raiders line, which is kind of weird. Seattle Rams, what do you do with that game? Buffalo, Arizona, what do you do with that game? Like, how do you even touch those? Like from a line, from a side perspective. Those are very tough games to kind of, you know, really get in on a side. And I'll see if you have either one of those games on your slate. I do not, but it's an interesting slate of games for sure.
Yeah. And we do this show on Friday, and that means that we have pretty good information, but we don't have all the information because like you said, I mean, this COVID contact tracing and stuff, like sure, Ben Roethlisberger should be able to play for the Steelers, but, you know, we don't know that for sure. And in the case of, like, basically it feels like at this point that there are more teams dealing with COVID-related stuff than not at this point. Like, it feels like, I mean, I don't know about you, but it does kind of feel like we are teetering here on, you know, like a forced bye week where, and this was something I guess that wasn't widely reported on, but it was reported on this week when they talked about adding the playoff spots in, is they actually do have it built in where they can play 18 weeks where, you know, they can push everything back a week if they need to. And I'm kind of starting to feel like that seems like a good idea because even to get handle all the contact tracing and everything, but also like, these dudes just don't give a shit anymore. And like, it's hard to blame NFL players for not wanting to just, you know, go to practice.
It's not NFL players. That's hashtag America.
Right. So like, and it's hard to blame people for that. But I think that the NFL needs to rethink, you know, if we really want to get this season played, it might be time to start thinking about some sort of bubble environment, because I mean, the scenario that none of us want, right, is we get to the playoffs, we get to these high leverage games, and, you know, Patrick Mahomes can't play, Russell Wilson can't play. Like, no, like literally not one person on the whole world wants that. And, you know, it, doing it with no bubble does leave that open to a possibility, which is pretty brutal.
Yeah, I mean, it's something we've seen, I mean, in this country in totality. I mean, people want to just they want to live their life. And, you know, I'm not here to preach and, you know, kind of take a side and tell everyone, you know, what's right or wrong. But that's kind of what we've seen, I think, start happening in the NFL. These players are starting to go out a little bit more and just live their lives. And then also, it's just like cold and flu season, man. Like, it's starting to be wintertime places, and the weather, and here, like, especially because I mean, I'm in the Midwest, and it was, you know, you think about that Raiders game two Sundays ago where the Browns played, it was sideways rain. It's like super windy. It's 30 degrees. And then we had a stretch where it was like 75 degrees and sunny for like 4 days. And now it's 40 again. Like, it's just, you know what I mean? It's, people are getting sick.
I mean, yeah, like I feel sick, bro. Like you wake up in the morning, you feel creaky, your nose is running, and like, it's a real thing, dude. Like, it's just everyone's going through that.
And we've only seen it happen to a couple of players. I know Melvin Gordon a couple weeks ago when they played the Patriots was one, like, was just regular sick and just couldn't fly in the plane and didn't go. You know, so I mean, we haven't had like a bunch of those crop up yet. And I would assume there would be more of those situations where people have natural, you know, cold symptoms or flu symptoms, and they're not able to play. They just are held out, you know, on a cautionary level. So I mean, we're in truly unique times. Definitely they've built in that contingency though down the road, and I'm with you. We don't want to get to the playoffs and have one of these games be impacted by, you know, Patrick Mahomes sitting out or being forced to miss a game, because that's not what we're all here for either.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, we are here to watch these dudes play at a really high level. So I will go ahead and go first here with the game that I feel least confident in. That is going to be the Philadelphia Eagles -3.5 at the New York Giants. And I guess I should say, I really this week only have one game where I'm like, I'm jamming this. I think it is the right side. Like, I am, you know, I'm all the way here for it. And kind of these next four are going to be tied to some degree. But the Eagles is the one I feel a little bit sketchy about. Not because of any... Well, it's just like the Eagles, dude. It's like they could come out, score 40. Alshon Jeffrey scores a touchdown in his return, whatever. Or they could do what they did against the Cowboys on Monday night, where they got bailed out by defense and special teams. I mean, I think the Eagles are much better than the Giants. I think Carson Wentz is much better than Daniel Jones. I'm not even really one of these Doug Peterson haters. I mean, I am a little bit, like, in the sense of Doug Peterson is probably a slightly above average NFL coach, but that doesn't mean he's as good as we thought he was, you know, 18 months ago when it looked like he was, you know, doing all this revolutionary analytical, you know, type stuff with the offense. I think the biggest thing is Jalen Reagor, Travis Fulgham, and even Alshon Jeffrey at this point. Like, that's a mean set of pass catchers. You throw Dallas Goedert in there. Miles Sanders is healthy. The offensive line had the bye week to get healthy. I mean, the Eagles might actually finally have something resembling a professional offense this week instead of just forcing – like we talked about it on the show 2 weeks ago. Like, you just never know what can happen on Carson Wentz. Like, every snap is an adventure, but every good player you give him on offense, you know, basically is going to make that adventure a little bit more enjoyable for the viewing audience. So I'm on the Eagles here.
This was my number four game, and my top two, like you, are kind of, well, I guess now my top three are kind of like you. It's kind of like, well, I mean, because this one, I might actually like the game total more than the side here. I might like the over here a little bit more. But the Eagles are in a spot that we've talked about a couple times on this show, a road favorite coming out of bye, you know, over the past 10 years. They're hitting at 70%. So they're in that spot. They're just getting healthy on offense, like you kind of alluded to. They're going to have Miles Sanders back. Goddard came back for the bye. Alshon looks like he's going to be involved in some capacity. So they're getting a little healthier. The Eagles are just sketchy because, like, we haven't seen them play, like, a game that even – I don't even think one game yet this season where you can go back and look at it and be like, yeah, they played good that week. Like,
yes.
Like, you know, they just haven't had one of those games. So it's really tough to kind of take
– Well, wait, no. The Ravens game, the offense played well.
They were down like 20 though
in the first half, until
8 minutes left in that game, and then they have that flurry at the end of the game where they come like kind of, you know, barnstorming back. But they really haven't played a clean game wire to wire. Even this first game against the Giants, they probably arguably should have lost that game because Wentz just kind of makes weird plays. Remember he threw that weird interception to James Bradbury in this game, like while they were up, like, and he just kind of rolls out and just like throws it, like almost like he's throwing it away, but throws it away to James Bradbury. Like we talked about it, like he's really channeled as like Josh Allen, but with like without like the outstanding plays like mixed in this season. Right. But the defense has been really, I guess you can say the defense has been pretty good all year. That's one thing. They're consistently getting pressure on the quarterback, and they're doing it without blitzing, which is a really good sign. It's kind of like the 49ers last year. When you can create pressure without blitzing and having to bring extra heat, it makes your defense so much better. I do like them too. I wish like it was a flat 3 instead of a 3.5, like it is in most places, which may push me towards the over. They are on my list as well.
Yeah, I mean, it just feels like the classic better team, better quarterback. And also, by the way, like I just want to be betting against Joe Judge for as long as he is in the NFL, because I think Joe Judge is a really, really bad NFL head coach. So I'm enjoying being on that side. So what is your number five?
So my number five is going to be a big dog this week, and it's the Cincinnati Bengals at 7.5. I mean, I just think it's too many points. I think this is a cover spot.
Joey backdoors.
Yeah, backdoor Burrow. They've lost 5 games this year, and 4 of those 5 losses have been by 5 or fewer points. They get there. They're hanging around these games. They're another team coming out of a bye. I also think the Steelers, the Steelers are a really good NFL team, and they're undefeated. You are what your record says. The Steelers are really hitting on some high variance plays here and some high variance performance. So they have one of the worst first and second down offenses. They're subpar in the NFL in success rate on first and second down, riding really high on third down success rate. Defensively, they've been really bad on third downs. They just are kind of these last 2 weeks. I mean, they probably shouldn't have won either of those games. I mean, the Ravens have almost 500 yards of offense on them and lose the game. And then last week, you know, if Mike McCarthy has any stones and remembers for some reason that he's a 2-6 team, the Cowboys probably win that game. He just QB sneak the ball, dude. Like, what are you doing?
It was so bad, man. He's so bad.
Mike McCarthy, I feel bad for you. You went from Jason Garrett to Mike McCarthy, Cowboys Nation. Like,
and there was so much optimism about the McCarthy hire too. Like, oh, you know, he's going to – He really did.
He's like, he told everyone, I watched every game and did all these analytics. And like, come on, man. Like,
he's the same guy.
You hired Mike Nolan. You did no analytics. No analytics let you to bring Mike Nolan back into the game. But I digress. Let's get back to that. I just think the Steelers have run pretty hot. That's what I'm saying. I think they're definitely a good team, but I definitely think they've run really hot. I think it's too many points, the full 7. I think the Bengals keep it close in division game. I think just getting more than a touchdown is going to get you the cover here.
Yeah, I am. I'm on board with this one. This one wasn't on my list just because I feel like the Bengals are like a high wire act where it's just like, it's all so close to tumbling down for them. Cause Burrow has to be so good in these games, dude. Burrow has to be, you know, hitting dudes in stride, making just dime throws while getting, just getting rocked. I mean, this guy just gets hit like every drop back.
One thing I do like too about betting the Bengals, and I've bet them a couple times, is that they just drop back and wing it.
Yes.
Like I love that. Like they throw on first down at one of the highest rates in the league. Like they're just dropping back. Like even in neutral games here, like they're just dropping back. And I like that because they're just saying, because it gives me faith that they're just going to keep the ball in their best player's hands. I like betting them with a lot of points.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is this was like kind of why I was excited about the Zach Taylor hire and why I was excited about some of those early results last year is it just looked like he was just going to be hucking the ball like crazy, even in situation neutral game scripts, which has been the direction that he was going. Okay. My next one, we were just chatting a little bit about this team before we got on air. I am taking the Chargers and the points here. It's 2.5 now. I would like it to be 3. I would love for it to be 3. It might get there. But
it dropped today. I've seen it's now 1.5. It's
going the other way.
It's going the other way.
So the Dolphins are good, right? Don't get me wrong. Well, They have some good aspects, right? I think Brian Flores is probably a good coach. I think Chan Gailey has a pretty good handle on what to do with the offensive players he does have. But their list of, like, talented offensive players is very short. It's like Devontae Parker and maybe Tua at this point. The offensive line isn't great. They have, you know, I mean, who knows what they're going to be doing with running backs this week. We could see, like, seven different dudes getting a carry for the Dolphins this weekend. The defense is pretty good, right? Mm-hmm. The Xavien Howard-Byron Jones combo is really solid. But the Chargers are kind of a bad matchup there because they'll just throw Jalen Guyton and Mike Williams out at Xavien Howard and Byron Jones and be like, great, you can just chase these guys down the field and we'll take 7 yards at a time to Keenan Allen. So I do. And also, like, Herbert has seemed so good, and you just have to hope that eventually, well, not hope, but you just have to think eventually, like, Anthony Lynn will stop getting in the way of Herbert winning games, but maybe not. I don't know, but I am on the Chargers here.
I do too, and I know anyone who probably hears that and they're reluctant, you know, no one wants to bet the Chargers at this stage, you know, because they wonder just how backbreaking, crippling fashion is Anthony Lynn going to get us to lose.
Yep.
I was on them a couple weeks ago, really big against the Broncos, and it came, you know, they're up 24-3, and they just take their foot off the gas and allow the back door, not even the back door cover, just a flat out loss. And then last week, you just look at his clock management at the end of the first half was a total disaster. And then, you know, you get down there and you have a chance to win the game and you run two fades, like literally two of the most suboptimal plays that you could possibly run to try to win that game. And especially one to Donald Parham, who listen, man, I want Donald Parham to hit because I grabbed him in some dynasty leagues, especially in tight end premium leagues. And I want it to work out, but that's not the dude I want at fourth down at the game on the line and just throwing a 50-50 ball to. That's not what I want my most optimal play call to be. But when you look at Herbert too, against this Miami defense, he's got a couple things working for him, I think. Well, one is that Miami has struggled really against any type of quarterback, any athleticism they face. They face Josh Allen, Russell Wilson, Cam Newton, and Kyler Murray so far this season, and they've struggled against all of them defensively. They've given up a lot of points in those games and a lot of efficiency in those games. And then Miami blitzes a lot. They blitz 41% of the time, which is the fourth highest rate in the league. And Justin Herbert against the blitz so far has been phenomenal. He's averaging 9.3 yards per pass attempt against the blitz. He has a 121.3 quarterback rating when teams bring extra heat. So I think that there's a couple things working for him in that capacity against this Dolphins defense. I'm here. And it's going the other direction, which makes me feel a little bit better about it. Like you said, you would go the other way. But, I mean, by Sunday, who knows? You might get the Chargers as dogs.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens with the line. I mean, I again, I'm not crazy about it just because it like having the head coach disadvantage when you're betting on a game, there's nothing worse. Like, there's nothing worse than being like, I'm literally just betting on this team out-talenting the other team because the team I bet on is not going to – figure it out in terms of like optimal play calling. Like, I'm going in, I know that that's not happening.
Yeah, brutal. Absolutely. And listen, I've lived in Anthony Lynn life a few times this season, but I'm just gonna say I'm due.
Yeah
Gambler's you're due. Fallacy. Gambler's yeah. Fallacy.
All right, what is your next one here?
All right, so we covered, I had three of those, okay. I'm already up to two left. My two is the Baltimore Ravens. And I know that's like a tried and true thing for me on the show. I keep betting the Ravens.
This was one I literally couldn't decide, dude. I was like, this could either be my number one or this could be like not on the list. So it ended up not on my list at all.
Okay. Yeah. I feel pretty good about this just being a supreme kind of like mismatch. Like, this is just not the type of team like the Patriots like line up with very well at this point.
Well, the Patriots are bad.
Well, the Patriots defense is a lot worse than people like think it is right now. Or maybe not, I don't even think that they think it is now, because you just saw Joe Flacco put up 27 on them on Monday night. But when you look at it from an offense perspective, Cam Newton has played kind of pretty well the past 2 weeks against the Bills and the Jets. But this matchup is really bad for what this offense wants to do, because they want to be able to run the football successfully, and the Ravens are going to give them a really hard time there. And then the Ravens are so good against the pass, but they're good in a pass in a capacity that really limits the New England offense because they play so much man coverage. Cam Newton's been one of the worst quarterbacks this season against man defense, and he's also been one of the worst quarterbacks against pressure in the blitz this season. He's averaging just 5.1 yards per pass attempt against the blitz, opposed to 8.5 yards when he can just be comfortable versus a normal blitz with no extra defenders. The Ravens blitz at the second highest rate in the NFL. And then you talk on the other side, the Ravens have really struggled to run successfully this season, really on everyone except for like the Patriots and like the Texans early in the season, but they've kind of struggled. But the Patriots are not the Patriots, the Steelers, they played 2 weeks ago and ran well on, which is kind of an outlier for the Steelers. But the Patriots defense has not stopped the run or the pass at all this season. I would like to see the Ravens get a little more creative. I had like a thread on it this week just about how they're using Lamar Jackson, and they're putting him in these situations where you have to rely on Lamar Jackson's passing acumen, probably the most suspect part of his game. And we always talk about the Ravens. Are they going to be able to pass themselves out of? Are they ever going to be able to punch back on a team when they're down? And the Ravens are one of the worst teams at running on first down, and they continue to run on first down. And they're putting Lamar Jackson in these second and third and longs regularly. He leads the NFL in rate of pass attempts on non-first downs of 7 or more yards needed or higher in the NFL. Like, he's not the kind of quarterback you want in that spot to be, you know, be relying on the huge down and distance pass attempts. And you don't have the weaponry either, because we haven't seen, you know, Marquise Brown or like Mark Andrews really elevate in this offense either. So like, you don't have the type of offense you want to be continuously in those long down distances, and they continuously are. So I would like to see some more creativity out of them, but I don't think this is a game where it really crops up to be much of an issue for them. And then you got the history of just the Patriots, like any, like mobile quarterbacks have given them just a litany of history over the past decade.
Yeah. It's like Bill thinks it's cheating to have a mobile quarterback. It's like, you're not allowed to, it's like, you're not allowed to do this against me, bro. Like, I'm ready. I spent 15 years figuring out how to stop Peyton Manning. It's not fair of you to like, it's not fair of you to be able to have Lamar Jackson or Patrick Mahomes run at me. I mean, I agree with everything you said, and the only reason why this doesn't scream like a giant jam is like literally Patriots mystique. Like, that's it. That would be, that literally is the only counter, because even as shitty as the Ravens have looked on offense, they've still been a better offense than the Patriots, and they have a better defense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, last week they basically crush the Indianapolis Colts. Like, the Colts don't even seem really that competitive against them. And it was a bad game.
They finally got it. Yeah. And they didn't play well. Yeah.
But yeah, but they didn't play well. And that's the thing, is like, I feel as if the Ravens have literally not gotten out of second gear once this whole year, even in these blowouts, right? They've only had two games decided by 14 or less points. And I still don't feel as if they've gotten out of second gear at all, ever, the whole season.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, too, Lamar. I mean, their offensive line is part of this equation, too. You know, you lose Marshall Yanda, and Ronnie Stanley's now out for the year. Lamar's sack rate is double what it was last year, which is also, you know, a bigger deal for them. But, yeah, I just think it's a big-time, like, mismatch in terms of what the Patriots need to succeed against, the kind of defense they can succeed against, and the Ravens aren't it at any level. I think it's gonna be a tough game for the Patriots to kind of get like more than 17 points.
Yep, that sounds right to me. Okay, so looking at my list here, I'm not exactly sure. Oh, okay, so I have two left. My number two is the Arizona Cardinals -2.5 at home to the Buffalo Bills.
Oh, so you are dipping in. All right,
I am dipping in. This is my thought. First off, Cliff is gonna learn eventually. I don't know when he learns. I don't know how he learns, but he does. I got to give Cliff credit. Yes, he loves to settle for field goals. No, he doesn't like to be aggressive on fourth down, but there is no denying, Kyler or no Kyler, this offense is really good. They do so many really interesting things. And the defense, I don't even know. I couldn't even name the Arizona Cardinals defensive coordinator right now if you put a gun to my head. But the defense is way better than it was last year. And that's even without Isaiah Simmons doing anything. Like, Isaiah Simmons has been like the Jonathan Taylor of defensive projects, basically. Like, hasn't been able to make an impact for the Cardinals defense yet at all. They've been better. I expect the Bills to have a really optimal game plan here, but I just think the Cardinals are better. I think Kyler is better than Josh Allen, and I think that, you know, DeAndre Hopkins, Christian Kirk, Larry Fitzgerald, Andy Isabella, that grouping of skill position players, I mean, we mock Larry Fitzgerald, but, like, he is still really good at catching 7-yard passes and falling down. And the Bills don't have anyone to do that. The Bills literally, like, on a 3rd and 7, and you're sitting there watching the Bills about to call a play, your mind is like, anything could happen here. Like, Josh Allen could like lateral to Dawson Knox. They could throw a 58-yard bomb to Steph Diggs. Josh Allen could fumble. Like, they don't do anything normal on offense, basically. And it's not that I think the Bills are bad. It's just that I think the Cardinals are a little bit better. And I also wonder if, like, Do you ever feel this watching a team do something really weird on offense where the coaches feel like they got away with it so they can't do it again? Where the Bills had that super pass-heavy game plan last week. They only ran the ball 2 times in the first half. Like, I like very weirdly get this feeling that Dable is going to come out and call like 16 consecutive run plays in the first half or something because he feels like he got away with it last week.
I don't know. They've been operating in that capacity, you know, kind of all season. They've been aggressive. The Bills are a team that, you know, for now, especially the first month of the season, I was like giddy about it. I was like, oh, this team totally gets it. Like, you know, and they totally understand what they have in Josh Allen, you know, the way they built that team. They're like, well, hey, we know he's going to make like 3 to 5 plays where we're going to be like, what the hell are you doing, Josh? But that's okay. But we're going to surround him with like all these things he does well. We're going to go, we're going to play 4 wide receivers more than any other team in the league, spread things out so he has easy reads. And if he doesn't get a read, he can take off and use his legs. We're going to use pre-snap motion way higher than we ever did. We're going to double his play action rate than he did for his career. And we're going to throw more on first downs and early downs. And they've done all those things. And they kind of hit that little lull in the middle of the season there. I don't want to say middle of the season because we're in the middle of the season, but you know what I mean. Like after that first month, I think a big
I was like so long on Josh Allen, like that was the part, that was like the part of the season where I was longest on him, and he was just cucking me good.
Yeah, for a month straight. And in the one, like the Jets game was just, I think, bad luck. Because, you know, they get in the red zone, 8 times, and they kick 8 field goals. They make 6 of them. Because I remember betting that game that they didn't cover because they only won by 8. But, you know, they marched down the field. They didn't punt in that game. So, I mean, it was just kind of like weird variance where you didn't get touchdowns in that game. But I like what they do. I think having John Brown, a healthy John Brown, makes a difference in this
offense. Huge difference. Yeah.
I think that makes a difference. I think when you look at this Arizona side, they still, you know, they face Joe Flacco, Andy Dalton, Dwayne Haskins, Jimmy Garoppolo. It's not a defense that's really been challenged a lot. Josh Allen is another one of those quarterbacks too, though, that does struggle with extra, you know, extra heat against the blitz. His stats do significantly drop, and Arizona does blitz a lot. They don't get home as much as they blitz. They blitz the 5th highest rate in the league, but they're only 16th in the league in pressure rate. But Josh Allen loses about 10% off of his completion rate and a yard and a half off of his yards per attempt against the blitz as opposed to otherwise. And you can totally see he's that kind of quarterback anyways. I think that they'll still be aggressive in this game. And this game's going to be a ton of fun. I mean, if you're from a DFS perspective, I mean, this is probably where you start in this game.
And, big time,
you know,
yeah.
Obviously, every week we're gonna kind of vulture around the Seattle game, just the way the type of games they're playing. But this game, in terms of, you know, star power and like excitement, I think that this game is really what has it. It makes it tough for me to pick it. Did it make it on my card? I think if you force me to take a side, I would side with Arizona. You know, just having the home field. Buffalo kind of winning a big game, Arizona drop. You know, I always love those kind of narratives. Well, you'll see because my number one is the team that just laid a big egg. But I always like betting teams that, you know, kind of and fading teams that come off of, you know, huge wins and then betting on teams that came off huge losses because of perception of where the line is. So I think I would take Arizona if you forced me to take a side. This is probably one I'll just sit back and enjoy and hope the fantasy points come because I have a lot of exposure to. I'm really pissed off about this Kenyon Drake thing because I wanted to really go back to Chase Edmonds for the people that think that he was like a real donkey pick and bad chalk. But the dude played 96% of snaps and had 28 of 30 backfield touches. Like, there's no way that was a bad play. I refuse to believe it. And I was hoping we're going to get to go back to him when no one would want to, but it doesn't look like we'll get to.
Yeah. All right. So I guess I'm guessing we probably have the same number one then, the Seattle Seahawks plus 1.5 points or am I wrong?
No.
Okay. There we go.
But go for it.
Well, I mean, it's just like, I'm not going to, like, Russell Wilson is not going to play that bad 2 weeks in a row. Like, just Goof versus Wilson. Like, I literally have no argument further than that. And I know the reason why the line is like this, I think, is that, first off, the Rams are way better than, like Johnny Public thinks. Like, the betting, like, sharp betting communities have a lot of respect for Sean McVay. They have a lot of respect for the Rams in general. I mean, they have so many talented players, it's hard not to. But, and also, all these Rams-Seahawks games, they're always terrible. They always go under. There was that 6-6 game 3 years ago, I think.
That's the other. That's Seahawks-Cardinals, usually. If you look at the Rams games, they are typically, like, bonanzas.
Well, there you go. I mean, that makes me feel even better. I thought I just had a very strong memory of these games being terrible. But, like, my thing is just Wilson versus Goof. I mean, give me the point and a half. Like, I don't even have to think, dude.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, I think there people are looking at, obviously, the history of McVay versus Pete Carroll. They've won 3 of the past 4 out of 6 since McVay's been with the Rams. The 3 of the past 4 games they played last year have had 59 or more total points. 31-33, 36-31, 30-29, and then 28-12 last year. That was the Sunday night game. Where the Seahawks came out and they just did not look good at all in that game. But yeah, I think people looking at McVay's history, McVay's also 3-1 out of the bye. So, like, they're getting a lot of credit, you know. Also, Seattle just lost, like, a game, like a big game too. So they're, you know, obviously that's going to swing, like we said. The Rams are one of these teams too. Like, I don't really know what the hell they are. I don't really know if they are good or not, or if they're really bad, or they're just one of these teams in the middle. Because they're another one of these teams, when you just look at the quarterbacks that they've played this year, 2 in his first career start, Nick Foles, Garoppolo, Alex Smith, Kyle Allen, Daniel Jones, Carson Wentz. Yep. Outside of Josh Allen and Dak Prescott in week 1, like, they just haven't faced anybody, any, like, tangible quarterback play. So I don't really know what this defense is. I know they got some pieces we like. We know they got Donald. We know they got Ramsey. But it was also a defense that had a lot of turnover from last year, and we just don't really – I don't really even know what we have in a lot of the, you know, their linebackers. It looks like they're going to get A'shaun Robinson actually on the field this week. I just don't really know, like, what the Rams really are. And we don't know what they're going to get offensively, because the way to beat Seattle is to just line up and throw the football down the field, and that's not what the Rams want to do. They want to run jet motion.
I hope they do, though. I hope they do.
I mean, I don't know what, like, the game plan is going to be. I mean, because the best the Seattle defense has looked all year was the 3 quarters they faced Jimmy Garoppolo. And it's kind of, like, similar in a way to, like, what McVay does with Goff. How McVay schemes around Goff is what Kyle Shanahan does with Jimmy Garoppolo. And the yardage didn't come in that game, in that Seattle 49ers game, until it was, like, a hell-wired game break situation and Mullins was just throwing the ball downfield in, like, good prevent defense. Because the game was out of hand. So, I mean, I do worry a little bit that this game maybe doesn't get there in a sense, because Goff is in the similar bucket as Garoppolo, and that they scheme so much near the line of scrimmage for him. And that's just kind of like what the 49ers do. And that's the best the Seattle defense looked all year, was defending that, like, style. And that's not really Goff's game, dropping back and throwing. They don't have the kind of receivers either to, like, just go downfield all game. Even though those guys are good players, you know, Cup and Woods are good players. I'm not trying to say that either, but, you know, that's just not their game is all I'm saying. Like, the way to beat Seattle structurally, like, isn't what the Rams do. And I'm curious to see how they approach it. It's a weird game. Don't really know how, I mean, it's a Seattle game. So of course it's a weird game.
I mean, they've never played a normal game. Everyone knows.
I don't really have a great feel on it, because I don't know, like, what the hell the Rams are, man. Really? Like, I know what Seattle is at this point. Like, but I just don't really know what the Rams are.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I feel confident in is that Russell Wilson, outside of, I mean, I don't know what he was doing last week. It was very frustrating to watch. But, like, outside of that, I feel like he's basically been Mahomesian all season. And Seattle is number one in the NFL in pass rate above expectation. Like, they are letting Russ cook, right? Results aside, they are doing what they should be doing, which is letting Russell Wilson pass the ball. This is not an offense based around Chris Carson anymore. So I'm taking the point. I mean, just the idea of Russell Wilson giving the points to Jared Goff, it really does just offend me. Even if the Rams in totality are the better team. So there we go. Your number one looks like it's not even on my list.
I've got the Buccaneers number one.
Okay, I can't do it. This is the all-time sharps recognizing a weird noisy spot, and like that's just not me. Like I'm never watching the team get shut out on national TV, especially when the quarterback is 43 years old and then coming back and betting them the next week, even if it is the sharp side.
I understand that. You know, we've seen the Bucks lay three eggs on primetime now. But this game is not at primetime. It's right in the heart of Tom Brady's like day cycle. Yep. He wakes up at 3 a.m. and goes to bed at 8:30 p.m. So this is right in the heart of his day at a 1 p.m. Eastern start. When you look at Brady, what went wrong for him last week and what went wrong for the Bucs, he was pressured on a season-high 54% of his dropbacks. This is going back now 3 years running. Brady has been horrible against pressure, especially interior pressure. 4 yards per pass attempt under pressure this year. It's 30th out of 33 quarterbacks, 100 or more dropbacks. One team that's not getting any pressure, Carolina Panthers. They're not getting any pressure. They're 30th in blitz rate. They're 30th in pressure rate, 18.1%. They have just 9 sacks this year. Brady's going to be comfortable, not have to deal with any pressure. Big bounce back spot. And we also just seen too, we've seen the Panthers kind of hang with the Chiefs. So that line, the Lions getting reduced in like that scenario
yeah.
as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, you got kind of all these pulling forces that I think that the Bucks already played them and beat them. By double digits earlier in the season. And that was when the Bucks, you know, that was the second game of the season. Now they've got some more weaponry, kind of a little bit more of a feel of what they want to do offensively. Brady's kind of knows a little bit more of the offense, buy into some of that narrative. It's just one of these spots that just feels like it should be more. But because of the circumstances that have just recently happened, it's not. So I think it's a big bounce back spot for the Bucks this week.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like everything you just said is true. Everything you just said is well reasoned and rational. It throws out what our mind most recently saw. But like, dude, I can't unsee it. I cannot unsee those wounded ducks. And it's like, let's not pretend like this is not the most cush offensive environment, Tom Brady. I mean, these are better players than he played with in 2008, right? Like, I guess other than Randy Moss, but I mean, he has. What would Patrick Mahomes do over 16 games with Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, Antonio Brown, and Rob Gronkowski? Like, and a good offensive line. Like, it's not like this is a bad offensive line. Like what would he do? I mean, it would be unbelievable. It would be incredible. Like, you know, and I don't know, Teddy to me, like he's kind of winning me over a little bit. Teddy in the sense of like not just being like a check down artist, like Teddy, he's standing in the pocket. He's taking some shots. He's running a little bit, which, you know, after his like brutal knee injury, you know, I never thought we would see Teddy Bridgewater like scrambling for like 8 yard first downs and stuff. And also, I think Matt Rhule might be a really good coach. I think that is something that I'm starting to realize is like, it looks like Rhule
back and forth on him.
Yeah.
He's so like, he does things and says things I know are sharp, but then when you look at the Panthers, they're one of the worst second half offenses in the league, which is kind of like a big signal to me that like, well,
they don't adjust.
That's like a big coaching. That's like a big coaching signal to me is that they don't counterpunch, and they were better in the second half last week against the Chiefs. But they are one of the worst offenses when you look at first half to second half splits in the league. So when you're good in the first half, it shows me you are sharp, right? Like you made a good game plan. You know what the hell's going on. Yeah,
your
like,
scripted plays are happening how they're supposed to happen.
And then in the second half, you just don't counter. Like you just, you know, you don't answer back the counterpunch. So I'm a little bit worried in that regard. I wonder how much is Joe Brady versus Rhule is where like my mind is like at this point.
I mean, my guess is that a lot of the things that we see them do on offense are Joe Brady related. My guess is a lot of the unlocking of Curtis Samuel, the short, quick throws to the running back that gets Teddy Bridgewater in rhythm. My guess is like, that's all Joe Brady. That'd be my guess for sure.
He has to be a favorite still to be one of the next head coaches in the league. I would assume.
Yeah.
You never know in this league, they might hire, we might see like, I don't know, like Raheem Morris get rehired for Atlanta because they won some games with him. I don't know.
Dude, I mean, can you imagine? I mean, seriously.
Yeah, just imagine him going like 500 the rest of the year and keeping that job.
Oh my God, dude, that is what you just said is like literally the most Falcons thing you can imagine. is them not making the playoffs, you know, and playing like a couple, close divisional games. Like maybe they find a way
they'll pull one out against like the Bucks or the Saints.
The Saints. Yep. And then that's it. Like they beat the Buccaneers on the road. Thanks to like Julio Jones has like 12 receptions, 214 yards and 2 touchdowns. Like it's just like an insane individual performance, and that's it. Yeah. I've been down this road. I see it. I'm just watching it happen right in front of me for sure.
Yeah, man, but that's it though. But yeah, I mean the Panthers are an interesting team. What are you doing with this Mike Davis thing, man? I mean, you have to play him, right?
I'm just jamming. Yeah, I'm playing him in cash. And so this is why. I mean, I will just break it all down right here. If Mike Davis gets 18 DraftKings points and you don't play him, you are done. Because you're not done, but you're pretty done. Because basically what that means is you have to be playing wide receivers who are $4,000 or less who scored the same amount of points. Or I guess the other thing is you don't play Mike Davis and you hope that the Seattle Rams game and the Arizona Buffalo game are not good fantasy games, because that's what everyone's doing. Everyone's going to play Mike Davis to stack Kyler, to stack Russ, to stack Goff, and to stack Josh Allen. If somehow all four of those stacks don't get there and Mike Davis only gets like 18, then you're talking about like you're competing for a lot of money versus like, I don't know, 20% of the player pool or something because of how heavily all of those aspects are going to get owned. But me personally, I'm not doing any of that. I'm going hard. I'm going hard after those games. And I just am playing all the Mike Davis because I think it's so easy for him to get, you know, 20 plus fantasy points here against the Buccaneers. Cause what you actually want is this matchup, right? You want them to be playing against the Buccaneers, who have a good run defense.
You can stop the run, but they're favored.
Yep. All of that. I mean, yeah. Lead. Yeah.
The first time these teams played, the Carolina running backs caught 13 passes.
Yep.
I mean,
yeah, I mean,
it's just laid it out.
Yeah.
It's a scenario you want. It's exactly the scenario. Yeah. I don't know how, like, you talk yourself out of it. Just because like you said, everyone's going to want to stack those games. And obviously Seattle games are becoming increasingly more difficult to stack. And we had the John Brown square last week, which he got tackled at the one on that screen. I was going to be really happy. But, you know, the Seattle guys are consistently expensive. You know, even we can debate every week. It turns into like a Metcalf or Lockett thing, even though Metcalf clearly.
There's no debate. That debate is done.
But the thing is, they're both expensive anyways.
It's like Lockett is cheaper, but it's not like he's free.
Right. Yeah. It's not like when you just choose to play Lockett, you're saving like so much money that it like opens up the rest of the board for you.
Like, yeah. It's not like Hopkins versus like Kirk.
McLaurin. You know, it's like you're still like taking Lockett over other good players. And then typically whoever they play against is getting bumped up. Their wide receiver ones are getting jammed up. I kind of like Josh Reynolds in that game too. It's like a flyer. He's been playing a lot more and leads the Rams in end zone targets, although they don't throw in the red zone anyways. But he's so cheap, man. It's like a cheap stack guy too in that game.
He might be able to get some boxes, what is your take on Tyler Higbee? Was it just like the sickest 5-game run of all time and now he's completely dead? Or like where are you at with Mr. Higbee?
I think it's very peculiar because if you look at his peripherals, like they're still good. Like if you look at like his, like, you know, per target, how effective he's been, he's still like good. Like, you know, in terms of what he does per opportunity, it's still good. The opportunities just are like they're just not using him.
Yeah, they use Reynolds now.
They're clearly just not using him. Yeah, they've gone more 3 wide, and maybe that plays into the take I just had. Josh Reynolds is playing more because of Higbee's injury, and maybe he'll play less with Higbee coming out healthy. But, you know, he's playing with Everett, and Everett's kind of like out-targeted him and getting used a little bit more than him. Last week, Everett ran 28 pass routes, 24 for Higbee. So it's not like it's like he's buried and he's not playing at all. It's just a 50-50 split kind of, and the more targets are finding their way to Everett at this point. But yeah, I mean, I don't really have a strong take on it. I mean, if you look at like when the opportunity he's actually gotten, though, he's been fine on him.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just no opportunities. It's like hard to just buy in, like if they're just not using him.
Yeah. I mean, so I have, I don't really... Why have him in the Scott Fishbowl? So, which is tight end premium. And mm-hmm. I also was able to pick up Jordan Reed this week. And so that is currently my big flip flop. Because I actually have, for the first time ever, I actually have a good team in the Scott Fishbowl where, like, if things run right for me in the playoffs, I can win it. Cause I have Kyler and Mahomes stacked with Hopkins and Watkins. So if things break right, just due to the way the playoffs work, like, it's the same way our main event team is. Like, if things break right for me, I'm like live to win it. But I really want to get the bye. And I play the guy who's second in my division this week. So it's like, I'm stressing all the lineup choices.
I don't know how, from a fantasy stance, you just don't start every week, especially when you build your cash lineups, your core lineup, and just put Kyler Murray in at this point.
Yeah. Like, I mean, he's scoring more fantasy points per game than Lamar last year.
Yeah. I mean, his passing floor, and, you know, I've rode the Cardinals pretty hard the last year and a half, the horizontal raid and ripping them. And the last month, it hasn't been that. Like, they are pushing the ball downfield. You and I even kind of, I think, early in the season were like, man, is this the best role for Christian Kirk? Like, really? And like,
but it is, though.
Christian, and he's kind of, I still think his best NFL role is something kind of in between what he's doing now. And, you know, he's just forced to play that role in that offense because they're
until Larry Fitzgerald retires, that's what he's gonna do.
Right. But with him playing well in that role the past month, we've seen it. It's like, it's unlocked Kyler's like passing ceiling, because Kyler, from a passing perspective, we've talked about it multiple times, you and I, about just like, you know, what is it, like, you know, Kyler's passing stats just aren't getting there. It's like part scheme and then part weaponry. And we've seen the last month, like, no, the passing stats are there. I mean, the past 5 weeks, he leads the NFL in yards per completion. The passing stats are there. And then this rushing production, man. I mean, there was 200-yard rushers last week, and he was one of them. He's got 8 rushing touchdowns. I just don't know how, like, he isn't the, like, guy you just, like, start, especially from a cash perspective. You're just like, I'm going to play Kyler. You got a shot at both bonuses every week.
I mean, literally, yeah. Like, and if this Buffalo game gets really competitive, I mean, he could get 50, right? Like, he's one of those dudes. Like, he is the only guy – well, not the only guy, because Allen and Mahomes can do it too, but, like, who can have those Vic games with, like, 6 touchdowns, 450 passing yards, and, like, you know, 80 rushing yards at a rushing touchdown. I mean, that's been cool. Like, it's been very cool to see Mahomes scramble a little bit, because he didn't do that at all in 2018 and really didn't do it last year until the playoffs either. It's a very cool element of his game.
Yeah, I think part of Mahomes running more is just a byproduct of teams are dropping back into so much coverage against the Chiefs. You know, teams realize they can't blitz him, so they're dropping back and just not really rushing. And then Mahomes, when he doesn't have some, he's able to, you know, extend plays and take off. I think that's been a byproduct of what we've seen the last, you know, the front half of the season and the very tail end of last season when his rushing picked up is because of that. Like, teams finally realized that you can't just blitz this guy. You just can't, man. Like, you'd rather live a Chiefs life getting paper cut to death. It's just the way – it's the only way you can, like, even just circumvent hanging with them is just getting paper cut.
I mean, they're happy to do it this year. Yeah. They're not even throwing deep this year. Like, wait until they get into a playoff game against the Ravens, dude. Like, we're going to see stuff that they haven't done all year. Like, they're going to be throwing bombs to Tyreek that haven't happened since last year. Like, it's going to be unbelievable, because, like, they're just chilling, dude. The Kansas City Chiefs right now,
very clearly they're the best team in the NFL. Like, yeah. It's not even – I know, like, Steeler fans will be like, oh, we're undefeated. And, like, the Chiefs are the best
team. The Chiefs are going to be favored by 4.5 points against the Steelers when they play.
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty clearly the best team in the league.
Yeah, they are. Okay, so which stack do you prefer? Buffalo, Arizona, or Seattle, LA? Because I think that's going to be a big choice for a lot of people who don't make, like, a billion teams, you know?
Man, it is tough. I keep going back and forth, because I told you when we talked about that game, my biggest problem with that Seattle side is the Rams side.
Like, yeah.
Like, because I know what the Rams should do and what I want every team to do, but that's just not their game. It's just not their game. And then, like I said, that whole layover with the 49ers symmetry in the way that, you know, the way they run their offense with all the motion and all the short passing and the way that Seattle actually defended that really well is the only thing they've defended well all season. Just gives me the heebie-jeebies, man. And then it's also, too, going all in on guys that, like, we typically don't go all in on. Like, dude, when have we ever, like, in we're slightly different players, but like, when have we ever gone all in on the Cooper Cups and Robert Woods of the world? Like,
oh, I love Robert Woods. I am a longtime Bobby Trees truther. Oh. So I don't have a hard time going all in on Robert Trees. I don't like Cup though, personally.
I mean, both of those guys are the same archetype of receiver in DFS that when they're popular, I hate playing them. I like these guys when they're cheap and you can get them in like a nice cash spot, but they're not that this week. And they're going to be highly owned. Like it's like the running, these guys, like the popular slot receiver for me in fantasy, DFS is similar to the non-receiving running back when they're popular. It's just like, yeah. I have a hard time jumping in the pool with the crowd on that archetype when they're that popular. And both those guys are kind of in that like bucket. So it's going to be interesting, this week, to see how I try to handle it. I have not made up my mind. I do like just the Cardinal side in general, especially if Tre'Davious White doesn't play in that game, obviously.
Are we allowed to talk about Tre'Davious White that way after DK Metcalf put him in the spin cycle?
Well, I mean, he played pretty well in the snaps that he guarded.
He did, but Metcalf did put him in the body bag on – it was at the end of the first half.
Yeah, he had that one long one.
Yeah. Oh, man. I mean, I don't know what you're ever
– He drew a long penalty, too. He also drew a long penalty in his coverage as well. But that's the thing that people get hung up on, these, you know, cornerback wide receiver matchups.
Well, not me.
He guarded him 22 snaps, you know. He was effective on those 22 snaps, but, you know, DK Metcalf ran 45 routes. Like, you know, it was like half the routes, and he played well. It's just one of these things, like, there's too much variance involved, and very rarely do NFL teams have one player guard one player for 100% of snaps and also have an overlap symmetry where they're also just playing man coverage all those snaps. And then if that doesn't happen in today's NFL, no one plays man coverage like that. Like, the Ravens
maybe in like 2006, dude.
Yeah, like no one plays defense like that anymore in the NFL, because you can't, because there's too many receivers on the fucking field now. Like, there's just you can't do that anymore, because your other guys will just get exposed if you do that. That's why teams don't do it. Like, because you don't have guys as good as Tre'Davious White, and especially the Bills, we haven't had Josh Norman for a few weeks. Levi Wallace has been hurt. Like, those other guys just get toasted if you do that. Like, you're just going to get – it was like the night the Cardinals just put Pat Pete on DK. And, like, Drake Kirkpatrick, like, – Seahawks were like, we're just going to throw a Drake Kirkpatrick every play. Like, screw your life.
And
like,
he didn't get roasted. It was bad.
Like, you can't do that anymore in the NFL. And then also, like, even if you're just like saying sides and you're like someone like, well, you're looking at percentages and you're saying, well, this guy runs, you know, 75% of his routes here and this cornerback lines up here. Like, it doesn't matter, because if they're not playing zone coverage, that also doesn't mean that he's running a route at that cornerback. You know, he can be getting passed on to zone. If he lines up on the left and he runs a slant, a dig, a post, that cornerback might not be trailing him. He's going to get passed on to someone else. So that even that is like kind of like a false lead. And saying like, he lines up here and this cornerback lines up here. There's just too much minutia in there that you just can't account for. You know, I mean, people got there last night. People thought that Michael Pittman was going to be on the kid for the Titans. I forget his name, Biones or whatever. And people were like, yeah, play Michael Pittman because of him. And that dude was on T.Y. Hilton most of the night. And Pittman still got there.
Like, I mean, Pittman, by the way, this rookie wide receiver class is ridiculous. Pittman's going to be another one of those dudes. Like, he looks like a guy who's going to – he looks like another guy who's going to have, you know, 4 1,000-yard seasons in the NFL or whatever.
This is
like,
the
he
time
looks
of year,
good.
Man. I do a podcast with Chad Scott, the free plug, and we talked about a couple weeks ago that it was the time to buy all rookie wide receivers. Even if they don't hit, you just buy them off of teams because rookie wide receivers typically play better in the back half of their seasons. We started to see, like, Judy's picked up. Pittman even last night.
Man, Rager. Rager is about Rager's to bring the freaking pain, dude.
It's the time to buy in on rookie wide receivers and get those guys on your roster.
Poor CeeDee Lamb, though.
I mean, he salvaged last week. He had the nice touchdown. He had a great, you know, toe tap on the sideline on that fourth down.
Where are you at with Ruggs? Because you have Ruggs in this league, this dynasty league that you and I play together in, where I'm tanking out, and I would like to acquire Ruggs, but I gotta be.
Deal.
Well, I mean, we could, but I gotta be honest. The sticker price for me, I think, is a little bit lower on Ruggs, because every passing week that he looks more and more like Mecole Hardman. You know, first off, I already have Mecole Hardman in every league I play in, but then also, like, Sean Siegel made this point the other day on Ship Chasing. Like, every week that they use him less like a real wide receiver and more like a gimmick, you got to be kind of bummed out, because what that means is he's not running good routes. You know, he's not putting in good practices. John Gruden and his coaching staff are not like, they're like, we got to get this kid the ball because we spent the pick on him, but we can't just have him go and try and beat one-on-one coverage because he's not good enough. And that's like not what you want to be seeing at this point in the season. Like, it's actually the reverse. And so that's bumming me out on Ruggs a little bit.
Yeah, just look at his, you know, target chart, his target heat map. And I tweeted it out 2 weeks ago. I can retweet it out as well. It just screams that they have no idea what the hell to do with him. Like, they really have no plan with him. And maybe that's and like you said, that might be a byproduct because of what he puts in throughout the week, right? Like, they just don't know. They can't work anything in for him. And that offense just, you know, kind of wants to go through Darren Waller anyways when they do throw. But you see a guy like Aguilar kind of is doing what we thought Ruggs would do, right? Like, I'm to a sense, like, Aguilar is being Ruggs right now. I just don't think that they have figured out exactly what they have in Ruggs. I think Rigor is in that bucket right now too. But just like they have more of a necessity to throw and get him targets. Because if you look at the three games Rigor's played, I don't even – is it Rigor or is it Rigor? I feel like I say it wrong every time.
I feel like it's Rager, but I don't know. Like, I've never heard him say it, but it seems like it should be Rager to me.
Yeah, I'm in like a weird spot with it. I feel like I say it wrong every time. But if you look at the three games he's played, they've used him in a supremely different capacity all three games. It's like they're trying to figure out what they have.
Well, so the first game, he played the role that Hightower played. Then – because he was hurt, so he only played limited snaps. Then in game two, then he played Alshon's spot. Then when he came back from injury, Fulgham is playing Alshon's spot, and Rager replaced Hightower. But now I don't know what they're going to do. Like, now, because they have Fulgham, they have Alshon, they have Rager, they have Ward, they have Goddard, they have Sanders. Like, all these dudes are healthy. I have no idea. My guess is that Alshon and Fulgham rotate, and Rager probably plays a hybrid of the X wide receiver role and then the Hightower role, which is the Y, and then offense. So he's going to have, like, I don't know, two deep targets a game, and then probably five short intermediate targets is my guess. But it really depends probably on what they decide to do with Fulgham. Like, what do you do if you're Doug Peterson with Fulgham? Like, you have this all-pro wide receiver who's been on your team forever, and Alshon, and then you have this guy who's been on your team for a month. He picked up off the scrap heap, but, like, who looks incredible. Like, I don't know what you do.
Yeah. I mean, it was nice to see on Thursday the Colts actually, you know, work Pittman in. Like, he was actually a functional part of their passing game. And, you know, Marcus Johnson got kind of the boot last night and played, like, clearly behind everybody else. So it's nice to see Pittman. Hopefully it's a thing of coming on. Like I said, you want to get invested in these. Even if they don't hit, just pick them up. If someone threw these guys back in, or if someone wants to, if you tack on and just trades, like, two for ones and, you know, those the extra guys, like, oh man, let me get that rookie wide receiver that hasn't done much. Because if you would have done it with Judy a couple weeks ago, you're sitting in a good spot now for the rest of the season with Judy probably. So definitely, you know, tack on these rookie wide receivers if you can in these leagues.
Yeah, that's just very good advice. And okay, which one of them would you want to acquire the most this offseason based on what you expect them to cost? I think my answer is LaVisca, because I actually think that a lot of the hype that we had for him this offseason is not going to come through because he's been banged up. They're switching quarterbacks. Shark looks incredible. Like, he's going to have a fine rookie year. He'll end up with like 600 scrimmage yards and two or three touchdowns or whatever. Like, it'll be fine. Not great, not bad. Or maybe this hamstring injury is really serious and he'll have less than that. But from what I've seen from him, and how he played more snaps every week until he got hurt, I don't like feel bummed out by him. And my guess is he will be able to be had far cheaper than Ruggs, Pittman. Like, Higgins and Pittman are going to be the ones who see big price hikes compared to what they cost, and Justin Jefferson.
Higgins is one guy that I just was like, just hunkered in on. Like, he got so much shade throughout the process this year, and I was like, I don't know, this dude checks too many like good boxes. Like, I'm just going to keep drafting him. He was the guy that, like, fell. He even fell lower than Visca in a lot of leagues. But those were the two guys that just, like, they checked too many boxes. Like, I'm just going to keep drafting because they were going, like, the top of the second round in rookie drafts this year. And I was like, hey, I'm just going to draft these guys and see what shakes out. And both have been good. I like the Visca call in terms of the context you laid out. I don't know how this like back half of the season is going to play out with Lamb and what how people, if there's people give him a free pass, which they should, because he's clearly the best dude, I think, on all these guys. Judy's coming out at the end of the season. Yeah, I think I like Visca. I like that call there. I think Higgins would be the one guy, though, even with the price hike, he just, in terms of age, you know, size, what I like, he's got the
dude. I wish he was 0.02 faster in the 40, and I would have just drafted him in every league. Because, like, I'm a huge thresholds guy. Like, that's like kind of my guiding thing. And T met like, well, he did not have an early breakout, right? It took a while for him to turn on, but his final season, and the same is true for Pittman. They both were late breakouts, but. Like of the right age. So it's like when they did get a chance to play, they crushed. But yeah, I mean, I really like T. It's just, it's like, I would be trying to use my 2021 picks to acquire 2020 wide receivers, I think, because, well, I haven't gotten too deep in this rookie class. Going to be a very interesting year for rookie drafts with all this very incomplete information we're going to be dealing with.
Well, listen, I am surging in that dynasty league of late. And I would like to move Ruggs for a player that could help me now. So
okay, well let's see if we can do it on air right now. So for people, this is a league put together by our buddy Scott Barrett. Pat Thorman plays in this league. Graham Barnfield, Matthew Berry, Rich, the Dynasty Trades HQ guys, Danny Kelly, Evan Silva, Jeff Collins, Bob Harris, and the Siege. My team is really bad in this league.
It was fine until you, it was more or less fine, but it wasn't that where you had to choose a side mode. So I give you credit. You had to choose either to go in or sell. And you, cause like I said, it was fine. It wasn't a terrible team. And you chose to go.
It was a really good team at the start of the year. I thought I was the favorite to win the league at the start of the year. I traded, 2 first round picks for Tyreek Hill to bolster my wide receiver group. My starting lineup at the beginning of the year, it's a 2 quarterback, super flex, tight end premium league. I was starting Dak and Ben. I was starting Ezekiel Elliott and Nick Chubb. My wide receivers were Tyreek Hill, Chris Godwin, Kenny Galladay, and someone else good. Devontae Parker. And then my tight ends were Blake Jarwin and Austin Hooper. So like that's a very good team. And then everybody got hurt. Dak tore his ACL, Godwin missed games, Galladay missed games, Hooper, like everyone got hurt. So I started to tank off. I traded away Zeke. My team is tanking off. Rich's team, though.
You started Nyheim Hines last night.
Yeah, I did. 28 points there. Well, so this is the interesting thing. I don't own my first round pick, but I own all my other picks, obviously. And I don't really know what to do with that in the sense of like, do you lose the game so you just have a nut second pick? Or do you try and win the games just to spite the dude who has your first round pick? Like it's like you don't know what to do, you know?
Yeah, I'm in a weird spot in this league because I don't have great running back depth, which is fine because I went for a productive struggle build. And, you know, obviously when you do that, you don't want to invest in the running back position. Because by the time you get there, all your good running backs are going to be bad running backs.
Right.
And I have like this gaggle of like wide receivers I have to choose from every week that I have to play a certain number.
A lot of good wide receivers here.
Yeah. So my team actually probably is a little ahead of where I thought it would be, you know, building this team last year. But it's surging now and I'm starting to get that taste of like, can I pull this out and like make some noise? And I'm playing a team that's ahead of me in the standings this week that didn't play, that had a bunch of players last night that didn't do well. So I'm like, all right, well, maybe I could, you know, gain another game here. So, I mean, I'm kind of thinking I do kind of want to have some of these wide receivers that I can move that are alluring to some of these teams. And you mentioned Ruggs. I've got guys like Christian Kirk. I hit on Terry McLaurin. I've had like 2 phenomenal rookie drafts in this league.
I mean, how tilted are you that you didn't ride that momentum wave with Clyde Edwards-Helaire? In this draft, we do our rookie draft before the NFL draft. Reeves drafted Clyde Edwards-Helaire at the 110. So, you know, basically the consensus 101 or the 102, Reeves got at the 110. Are you tilted you didn't try and move him?
Not really, just because like I was trying to stash rookie running backs anyways, like I said, just the process of the build. Like I was gonna use my rookie picks in subsequent years to kind of add running backs.
Yeah,
since I had these receivers and I had so many draft picks, because in the startup I said I went for the productive struggle where I first year I really didn't plan on competing, but I wanted to acquire a bunch of draft picks the following year. And like this year in the first round, I got what? I got Burrow, DeAndre Swift, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I got someone at the top. I got Ruggs at like 14 or 12 or 14 or something. And I got Ruggs on this roster. I have two firsts next year already. I swung a deal, so I already have like another future first that's extra on my picks. So it's kind of, it's going well, the plan, but you know, eventually if you don't win, it never goes well enough.
Yeah.
But I still don't have the horses at running back, and ultimately dynasty or not, like when it comes down
you
to
gotta,
winning
you gotta get
games,
points at running back. Yeah.
Yeah. You've got to have running back points. Doesn't matter what format you're playing. And it comes down to like, hey man, well, I had Dalvin Cook score 40. I don't care about what your receivers did. Yeah,
so
I definitely would. The problem is that as a fit, you don't have good running backs because you traded.
Well, I have Nick Chubb. Nick Chubb is the piece I have to move here. Who is in a weird? I can't decide if he has more or less dynasty value than he does redraft, like for the next 6 weeks versus the next 3 years, because Kareem Hunt signed that contract. Mm-hmm. But does that make it more likely that they trade him? Right, that Nick Chubb gets traded, or that he goes somewhere else that and pays him a bunch of money after that first contract. I mean, I don't know. I feel like wherever Nick Chubb is valued on, like if we went to like Dynasty League Football and looked at his trade value, I feel like both you and I would be way lower on him than whatever the consensus value is.
Correct. I think also too, archetype of player we value is.
Yeah, he's like, he ain't it. Yeah.
I mean, he's great. He's a phenomenal player. You know, it's like no shade towards Nick Chubb. Like everything, like from a rushing stance, like peripherals, like he looks amazing. But you know, also is paired with another really good back and doesn't catch a lot of passes.
Honestly, the only guy I could give you who I think would even have a chance of helping you like fill these holes would be, it would actually be a tight end. It would be Hooper. He would be the only one, because I don't, like Nyheim Hines isn't better than like Nyheim Hines isn't even better than Todd Gurley, really. You know, they both just need to score touchdowns. That's it.
Like, no one can spin 60 yards from scrimmage into a top 10 week like Todd Gurley can.
Todd Gurley is the running back 5 in PPR, but I like don't think he's had over 22 points in any game.
Yeah, because he gets 60 yards from scrimmage but falls in the box every week.
Yeah.
I tried to dump Todd Gurley for weeks in this league while I didn't think I was going to make a move. And just for like, I was trying to trade him for like second round picks, just like these teams at the top, like, hey, do you just want a running back the rest of the year? Give me a two. Which is underselling Todd Gurley, by the way. Still, I understand he's gross and not people like to invest in him, but like for a two, like he was worth it. And I couldn't get it. So I'm stuck with him and I'm stuck with keep playing him. But yeah, I mean, the thing about Hooper is I don't even know if I would play him over the guys I've got. I mean, I've got,
yeah, probably, I don't think you'd play him over. I don't think you'd play him over Hockenson.
I have Hockenson, Ingram, and Tanyan in a tight end premium. And I don't know if Hooper jumps those guys. It just adds like another guy to decision-making. Yeah. Like, of decision to get wrong every week. Cause I'm always going to play Hockenson.
Well, the only way that it would even make sense would be for me to give you like replace some of the crap on your roster, like replace guys like, you know, Jalen Samuels and Dexter Williams with like slightly better crap, like Gabriel, like Gabriel Davis and Andy Isabella and Traquan Smith and shit like that. Like it's not anything that actually makes your starting lineup better that would make sense in trade. It would all be depth stuff. Cause like I have on this team, I have a bunch of guys who are going to be ranked like 100th to 150th in dynasty. like a bunch of guys who barely contribute, who are like barely rosterable in normal leagues, but this league is super deep. So they have like a little bit of value, but I don't have, I mean, I traded all my blue chip players away other than Godwin and Galladay. Tough scenes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'll have to think about it. Maybe I'll still send you something here, though. But it's tough. We're tough pairs because I want to obviously need a running back,
doing a wide receiver for a wide receiver trade is like very whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I call them musical chair trades. That's usually what I refer to them as.
So there is one trade that you clearly win, I think, but might be worth the gamble for me just because of the associated age, which would be Parker for Ruggs, where you get a guy who's more likely to score points this year. And I get the, it could be anything, even a boat box of Henry Ruggs, but I don't even know if I would want to do that, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the same. I'm in a similar boat too. Because you're just adding Parker to a gaggle of like I have a bunch of Devontae Parkers.
Yeah.
Like you know, because I mean, this roster. So I've got Keenan Allen, Terry McLaurin, Allen Robinson, Christian Kirk, Marquise Brown, Sterling Shepard, Darius Slayton. Now I have Jacoby Myers, which might be a thing. I don't know. So I mean, I've got a lot of guys in that bucket of like could be a wide receiver three to a wide receiver one on a given week. I mean, I still would personally like to make a play for Godwin, but I don't know how we make it happen.
I mean, Godwin's not leaving for less than the equivalent of two firsts or a first plus like a good asset. Because
if I do Ruggs in a one, do I get Godwin?
I think maybe like 3 weeks ago, but I don't know. And maybe that's too prisoner of the moment of me. But like I like Ruggs catches the 40-yard touchdown against Bashaud Breeland against the Chiefs, and I'm like, holy shit, this guy looks incredible. And then it's 3 weeks of him, you know, being Devery Henderson or whatever. And I'm starting to waffle a little bit, but like that's at least in the realm of where I'd have
to
think about
it. And it works inversely too. That's dynasty in a nutshell, man. You have this guy, like I have Ruggs, and you're just hoping to see some life. And inversely, like I said, he catches that touchdown. I'm like, all right, well, here we go.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, I mean, it's so hard in dynasty to really keep the long lens because you just get caught up in like, well, this guy. And another thing we do is we kind of expect guys to progress in a linear way. And I think for wide receivers, that's much more difficult for them to do that. Like, I think that, you know, Ruggs' season end numbers might look okay, but I think he is going to have a lot of duds kind of spursed in through here. I don't know. I don't know what to think of Ruggs.
I will say, though, since people probably checked out on this, let's talk about our dynasty teams in this league for 20 minutes. But I will say, if anyone's made it to this point, I would encourage them to do the rookie drafts before the actual draft.
It's so fun.
So much. It adds so much more to it. It makes you invest more in like the rookie process. You know what I mean? Like, cause we can all wait till after the draft and just say like, oh, I took the Chiefs took a running back first. I'm gonna take that guy, you know, like, and that's the analysis. But like before the draft, like you have to have a Clyde Edwards-Helaire take. You have to have kind of a pulse of like, all right, well, cause you don't know where they're going to go. You don't know where they're going to go in the draft. And it makes the process of doing some homework on the rookies a lot more fun. Makes that whole process fun. It also changes the value of draft picks. You know, some people we've seen in this league in particular, people handle draft picks
way different,
like a wide range of difference in how people.
Yeah. Like Colin, like Collins and Joe, they just like, don't give a shit. They're like, whatever, you know, so hard for us to turn these into meaningful assets.
Mm-hmm. And cause it's ramped up because you draft before the draft too. I mean, just like to kind of give people like a pulse because you can lose a ton of value. Well, you have no free outs in this league. So like the year before Hakeem Butler was like the 103 or whatever.
Yep.
And then so you don't get an out when he gets taken in the fourth round or whatever. You don't say, all right, well now he's a 202 by the time we're drafting. There's no out there.
Yeah. You just got to eat it.
And this year, there really wasn't any of those guys, I guess, per se. So the top,
because everyone was so good at the top.
Yeah, everyone ended up just good. There were some steals, I guess, or some people like would got bumps, but like Jordan Love like went 206. Herbert went 202.
I got Gabriel Davis with the Mr. Irrelevant pick, very last pick.
Antonio Gibson, went in the third round. The year before, the year before is another good example. So Mecole Hardman went in like the fourth round, but obviously when he gets taken by the Chiefs in the second round and they trade up, his draft value skyrockets.
Both of those players, by the way, went to Danny Kelly.
Yeah, Danny, man. Danny's good. Danny's legit.
Danny crushes, dude.
He's good, man. He produces good content too. I don't know if you guys.
I just cut ties with Cam Akers and traded for Mecole Hardman for Danny because Danny knew when he sent that trade that I would do it. Obviously, because he knew that I was just like, you know, I'm the Mecole Hardman truther. But it's not looking good for Cam Akers because Daryl Henderson is the same age as him, and they're under contract together on the same team for 3 years. Like Akers is, if I could get 75 cents on the dollar for Akers in Dynasty right now, I would do that for sure, which is what I thought Mecole Hardman was.
My biggest regret, though, is because there's some gamesmanship in here when you draft before the NFL draft. And so I had in my rankings and everything, I had J.K. Dobbins over DeAndre Swift. I thought Dobbins was a better player and a better prospect. But in this draft, I took Swift ahead of Dobbins because I thought Swift was going to go in like the first round, like the back of the first round.
Yeah, like where CEH went.
And yeah, I was like, he's going to go in the back half of the first round and he's going to like walk into like this just job right away. Whereas,
and
like,
you can
Dobbins,
flip him.
No, because Dobbins didn't work out. Like, he didn't work out for anybody. And so I was like, I don't know where he goes. So I tried to do the thing where I was like, yeah, I'm just going to take the consensus value. I took Swift over Dobbins, and I'd so much more wish I had Dobbins right now on this roster.
I mean, Dobbins is looking like a guy who can go full Miles Sanders in the second half of the season. Like, he's looking like a guy who's capable of doing that. I don't know if he will. Yeah.
The Ravens are just, I don't know, man. I think the Ravens are going to be fine in totality, and their playoff schedule is good. But I definitely think that they have this thing for both of their vet backs for sure, too, though. I definitely think that's real. This Gus Edwards thing is real because I think Gus Edwards is, like, the prototypical dude that, like, coaches like. Like, he doesn't have negative
runs.
He doesn't lose yards ever. Like, doesn't probably complain. He's probably, like, a great dude. Like does everything the coaches ask because he came for nowhere. You know, he grind you to work for everything. So he's like, I bet coaches love the shit out of Gus.
Oh, man. Where did he go to college?
That is a great question, man. I don't even know where Gus Edwards went. Let me just ping it
real fast. Let's do some live research here on the air. Rutgers. Oh, he was a college transfer even. He went to this is the most Raheem Mostert ass shit. He went to Miami, Florida for 4 years, only got like 60 carries a season, and then sat out a year. I'm tilting, dude. And wasn't even really a lead back at Rutgers.
No, he had 800 yards his last season at Rutgers as an older senior too, because he was he was a fifth year because of the transfer. He's a fifth year senior and only 800 yards. Dude. And he's a 6'1", 230 pound guy. So I mean, he wasn't invited to the combine, was he?
There's got to be no way. I can look, but there's got. I mean, this is a guy who should have been playing for the Battle Hawks. Like this guy should have been. Looks like he did go to the combine because Manchin doesn't have him with the pro day caveats on player profiler.
Okay. Interesting.
I can't say that for 100% certainty, but I believe it looks like he was a combine invite.
Yeah. Draft Scout doesn't have him with any combine stuff.
Okay. So then,
but
then
I don't know.
Just a pro day. Yeah.
But I don't know. But, I figure that like he's like at least gonna hang. I figure coaches love this guy, like he's like a dude that like they love. I figure he's gonna stay involved too. And then Mark Ingram, like we know, like the locker room loves that dude.
I need Mark Ingram to get the fuck out, dude.
Yeah, man, absolutely, 100%, dude. I mean, I will never. I'm not usually the type of person that like will come back and say like, "What the hell? Like, was anyone doing in a fantasy draft?" Because like, there's a lot of ways to get there in this game, and it's very humbling playing fantasy.
No, three picks that have absolutely no explanation: Leonard Fournette in the third round, Le'Veon Bell in the fourth round, Mark Ingram in the fifth round. If you made those selections, you knew you were wrong. Then you did the wrong thing, and you got the right result. And you just have no one to be mad at but yourself.
Yeah, the Mark Ingram was like one dude I just could not grasp why anyone would roster like this season at any level.
Scored 14 touchdowns last year, dude.
I know. Program. But all right, whatever. All right, listen. I'm sure that if anyone hung around this long,
yeah. Yeah, everyone, check out Rich's stuff on sharpfootballanalysis.com. Make sure to listen to the podcast with Dan. Make sure to listen to the podcast with Scott. You can find all of that stuff on Rich's timeline, or if you just search Sharp Football Analysis on iTunes. And we will be back next week.